We are back to talk about the animated series Star Trek Lower Decks, which is currently streaming on CBS All Access.
Hopefully you've watched it by now, otherwise, you know, spoilers, duh. And, you know, seriously, why would you be listening to this episode if you hadn't already binged it with us?
Maybe they just like hearing our voices.
I mean, I do have an awesome voice, so I'll allow it.
Make it so, number one.
That is what my wedding ring says.
So for today's episode, we're talking about season one of Star Trek Lower Decks. We're going to talk about character development, mention some of our favorite episodes. For Isaac, it's all of them.
All of them. They're all good.
They're all good. So I picked out like half that I felt really stood out to me. And then we'll also talk about some of our theories for season two. So let's get started with character development. I definitely wanted to talk about Ensign Beckett Mariner and Captain Carol Freeman, our tense mother-daughter relationship dynamic on this series. They're the ones, Mariner for sure, does the most growing. Out of our ensign characters.
I'm thinking about that, right? So I would say that Tindy doesn't change. So I'll give you that. Rutherford, yeah, he doesn't really change. Like, he doesn't have any character growth throughout. Like, he's all the same. There is a major change at the end of the season, obviously. I think Boimler ends up also changing.
Okay, we'll get to Brad.
So yeah, I mean, as far as people that you know kind of realize some of their foibles, I would say
foibles.
Yes.
What is that, a word?
Yes.
Foible.
Uh huh.
F-O-I-B-L-E.
That is correct.
That is a word?
Yes.
Really?
You want to be, I mean, one of today's lucky 10,000?
Yes. What does that mean?
It's, you know, flaws.
Okay. You don't have to look it up. I'll take your word for it.
No. I'm going to look it up. Yeah, weakness or eccentricity in someone's character.
Okay. I learned a new word today.
There you go. And hopefully so did our listeners. This is what you're here for. You want to learn language from Isaac, right? You don't want to hear about TV shows. You want to hear me teach you new words.
You were saying?
Right. So, yeah, I think there's three characters that showed some growth. You're right. There's Beckett and Captain Freeman and Brad. Which one had the most growth? I would definitely say it was Beckett from the therapy / movie episode. But Brad, I think, would be the second most changed.
I don't think Brad's change was super dramatic. Brad's our good boy, Boy Scout. Always doing the right thing. Always, like, putting in 120% into everything that he does. He enjoys responsibilities. He's a good boy.
But by the end of the season, he is willing to start breaking those rules. And is less stressed out about being the perfect officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that really shows, you know, in the sort of final scene where he's transferred to a new ship. Yeah, spoilers. He's on a new ship by the end of the season.
Hey, we said spoiler warning.
Yeah. Like, I'm letting it all out. Because, I mean, God, there's so many good reveals at the end of the season. It's just super awesome.
So with Mariner and Freeman,
I don't think that Freeman changed too much. I think that she...
Oh, no, no. I'm not saying she had... I'm not saying her as an individual character had a lot of development. I'm talking about her and her daughter. Their yeah. relationship had a big change.
Oh, that's true. That's very true. And that's part of what drove the big change in Mariner to begin with, right? So I agree with you. I think that Mariner's definitely the most changed. And I... You know, when you first start the show, they have...
It's very tense. She's always, like, disrespecting her mom.
Well, so we're this isn't where I was going with that. But you're right. I was going with, you know, they start the show with Brad reading a log to himself like a captain would, right? And then Mariner comes in and starts making fun of him for it. And so you get the sense, at least at first, that Brad is the main character of the show. But I would argue that he is really not. And that it is Beckett Mariner who is really the, you know, the main thrust behind the show. I don't know why I wanted to point that out. But I just wanted to say that, like, it at first you... I don't know. We're led to think that, you know, the show centers around Brad, but I think the show really centers around Beckett Mariner. And Brad is a close second, but Beckett really features a lot more prominently, I think, which is probably why she gets so much character development in because she's a lot more interesting person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, Brad's just this... like, he wants to just follow all the rules. He wants to, like, literally do everything by Starfleet manual. And Beckett is more, you know, fly by the seat of your pants. Like, do what needs to be done, right? She's not breaking rules just to break rules. She's breaking rules to do good or what she sees as good. And she doesn't want to be held back by Starfleet regulations.
So Beckett and Brad, they complement each other. They're good foils.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Mariner is the one who teaches Brad, hey, you should loosen up a little bit.
Right. In that episode where they are, well, actually, she's constantly trying to get him to lighten up, right? Like, yeah. Even in that first scene, right? Well, and so Brad at least has... And what's his full name? Isn't it Bradward?
Yeah.
Okay.
You've got your Bradleys, and then you got your Bradwards. Bradward!
So, in that first scene, Beckett cuts Boimler with a batleth, right? Cuts his leg. And he ends up having to go to the go to sick bay, right? Because she's a little more wild and crazy, but in follow up episodes, she's like delivering Starfleet farming supplies to people that like haven't paid for them or something. I forget why they weren't supposed to have them, but the other time that I can really think of where she's trying to get Boimler to loosen up is that time where they're trying to deliver the Klingon general to the...
These are both in the first two episodes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Klingon was episode two.
Oh, was that episode two?
And I feel then, like that was four for some reason. Brad was like, I get to escort a really prestigious Klingon guy. And then Mariner just kind of joins him. It's like, oh, yeah, I got the same assignment as you. I'm your co-pilot.
No. He's her co-pilot.
Oh, he's her co-pilot. Yeah. Like, and then it turns out she's friends with the Klingon, and Brad's got to babysit them.
Yeah. And the Klingon general is all, like, crazy drunk, and then he steals the shuttle, and so they have to try and track down the shuttle. And
that was funny.
So Brad is, you know, clearly uptight the whole time.
So that episode is a really good example of seeing them argue, but then work together.
Right. And what's funny is that Beckett sort of, after Brad has, you know, essentially failed at this mission because he's been following the rules and everything is Like, he almost had eggs laid in his throat from an alien that he had never even heard about, and Beckett knew exactly what was going on. Or, sorry, I should say Mariner. Mariner and Boimler. I'm going to try and refer to them by their last names, because that is typically how they're referred to in the show. After all that, you know, she hires a Ferengi friend to pretend to be this highly stereotypical Ferengi, and then she pretends not to know what a Ferengi is, just to give Boimler a win, because he was about to quit Starfleet because he was so bad at the actual, you know, practice of, you know, doing things for Starfleet. He was like, no, we need to do this, you know, protocol wise, but that's just not how things happen in reality. So she gave him a win, and, you know, she understands, I guess, that he needs time to change. She seems, I don't know, fairly aware for someone that's so wild and crazy, or at least on the surface so wild and crazy.
She's aware of a lot of things. She just doesn't necessarily want to admit to...
Well, yeah, I think she's got a problem with being in, like, the burden of command.
She's always talking about rank and how the higher up you get, the more bullshit and responsibilities you have, and that's stuff that she doesn't want. So, like, she's always retaliating against her mother, who is, you know, the captain of the ship.
Right. In an effort to essentially sort of stay in a position where she can still do some good, but doesn't have all, like I said, that burden of command, right? So, in a situation, she can take command and get things done, but she doesn't want to have to constantly think about, you know, the well-being of all of the crew. She, like, just wants to do the right thing, essentially, and it's easier to do the right thing if you don't care about getting promoted, and
if you don't care about doing everything by the book,
right, which is what you need to do to get promoted. So that's sort of her philosophy. She uses this idea that, look, like, as long as I don't get promoted, I can continue to do the things that I want to do. And so, you know, throughout the season, she, you know, actively kind of goes against any time that someone wants to give her more responsibility or give her a promotion. She intentionally tries to fuck that up.
So there's a good quote. I think it was Mariner. I just had it and then I lost it. It was something about rank.
Oh, I don't remember. Sorry. I wish I could help you. I haven't watched the series enough to know all of the lines yet. I'll get there, though. I really do like this series. So I guess you wanted to talk about episode 4, The Moist Vessel.
So that's the one where Mariner... At the beginning, Captain Freeman is doing, like, this presentation with a guest, and Mariner keeps yawning because the guest is so boring.
Did you get enough sleep, Mariner? Yeah, I did. Slept like a log. He's just so boring. How are you guys not yawning?
So she's disrespectful in front of other officers and a guest to her mother. And so, obviously, Captain Freeman is pissed as fuck. So she gives Mariner a bunch of, like, shitty tasks to do on the ship, such as holodeck waste removal. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, no, and so, oh, that was such a good joke. He's like... God, what's his name? Commander.
Ransom.
Yeah, Commander Ransom's like, I have her cleaning out cum from the cum receptacle in the holodeck. But obviously those things are bleep, so it's, I have her cleaning out bleep from the bleep receptacle in the holodeck. And the captain's like, people really use it for that? And he's like, oh yeah, it's mostly that.
Oh, gross. Oh, and that's another thing we forgot to mention in the preview. Like, curse words are still bleeped.
I like it.
I like the effect. I just thought it was kind of surprising to me the first time around because this is a series that's streaming on All Access. So it didn't occur to me that, because CBS is a broadcast network.
Right.
So they have to cater to children and families.
They have to follow FEC rules, which...
FEC?
Sorry, FCC.
FCC. They have to accommodate with FCC rules. So they'll bleep out those words.
Yeah, because you can't do that on broadcast. In fact, I'm pretty...
But this wasn't broadcast. That's why I was surprised. But they're a broadcast network.
Is it not broadcast?
I don't think this is on TV.
Why would they release it every Thursday if it wasn't broadcast?
It's called CBS All Access.
Yeah, but like, why would you do a weekly release if it's not coming out on television each week?
I mean, those were the complaints of the people who wanted to watch season 2 of The Boys.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, I mean, thinking about it, it does seem like it's a little too violent for broadcast television. But, I don't know, NYPD Blue was pretty racy on ABC back in the 90s, so I feel like they could get away with this.
But, yeah, I was sort of recapping episode 4, Moist Vessel.
Yeah, sorry.
But, no, I was just, I'm trying to not summarize so much. Oh, so basically, there's a lot of tension and conflict between the mother and daughter in the first half of the episode, and then shit happens, and they gotta work together in the second half.
Right, because this is where they're towing a generation terraforming ship, and it's got this terraforming goo, and the terraforming goo gets all over the ship, and it starts transforming the ship. And I really liked, at the end there, when they get down to, I think it was the cargo bay or something, Beckett's like, okay, so we need to use this gas and blah, 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 and, you know, we need to do this. And she looks over at her mom and she's like, unless you want me to use a pointier rock from the earlier conversation where her mom's like, you sure you want to use that rock? I think you need to use the shale that's over there. It's, you know, it's more pointy. And she's like, no, mom, this rock is fine. Stop treating me like a child. We'll get... Yeah. So that was... I think, obviously, and you see it in the episode that shows Captain Freeman that her daughter like really does know what she's doing. Even still, I think Freeman's like, well, then why does she like intentionally fuck up all the time? And I think she doesn't realize the sort of conflict that's going on in Beckett's head. Mariner's head about like she wants to be able to actually do good and she doesn't want to have her hands tied by Starfleet regulations.
I think that sums up the mother-daughter relationship.
Okay.
Yeah. Brad, we already talked about, we mostly talked about Brad and Mariner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're foils. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so that's... The show really, and I mentioned this a little bit in the spoiler-free preview episode, the show really kind of, you know, they present it as it's a foursome, but it really does tend to be Boimler and Mariner doing one thing and Rutherford and Tendi doing another thing.
Rutherford and Tendi would be the B-plot.
Yeah,
in typically. Pretty much every episode, they were the B-plot.
Yeah, there was that one episode though, which where Boimler gets phased from Rutherford's transporting technique,
uh-huh.
Right? And so Tendi creates this crazy fucked up dog, and they end up, you know, on a ship to the farm where freaks go to be cured of their. You know, space ales.
But there's actually a farm in this case, and it's not just a euphemism.
Yeah. Like, it turns out to be a very beautiful planet where they're like, okay, so you guys will just chill and relax. We'll figure out how to fix you eventually, whatever. But by that time, Boimler is, he's cured himself just through time. Oh, I loved that episode because the captain of the ship that was taking them there, he was like, "No, it's my fault. Maybe we should, you know, turn on some lights in the ship and you know, give it the paint job some different colors so it doesn't look so sinister all the time." I'm like, "Yes, that would probably be an excellent idea." I liked, and that's sort of a nod to the audience, which the show does a lot. About just different things in general.
Those guys have something happening every week.
Yes. They made that joke twice.
Yeah,
In the show. Once about Star Trek The Next Generation and once about... I loved this.
Those old scientists.
Yeah. Ransom's like, "I find it weird when you run into civilizations from the TOS era, and you know, every Trekkie is like, the original series." I didn't even stop to think about why he would call it the original series, but obviously he's like, "You know why I call it the TOS era?" And Freeman's like, "What? No." He's like, "Those old scientists." It's like Spock and Scotty. Those guys seem to be running into new aliens every week.
Oh,
I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's good. That's really good."
The writing is on point for this show.
Yeah, oh man, I really like it. I like all the references to the other shows.
Obviously.
I don't know how well that goes for people who have not seen any Star Trek. Like, if this is their first exposure to it, I still think it should be good, but I feel like there's...
I mean, we talked about this in the preview. A lot of it will fly over their heads if they're not somewhat familiar with universe canon.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, you could totally test this out with one of your other friends.
Yeah, I could try that. I have to find somebody that I know.
Does Jose watch Star Trek?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
So he's like you and me.
Yeah. But maybe Watkins or Schools. I'll see.
Moving on to favorite episodes. So Isaac says all of them are his favorites. I have 5 listed. My first favorite is episode 3, Temporal Edict. There's just so many aspects of this episode that were just so funny to me. I listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I listed 5 aspects in this show, in this episode. And remember, these episodes are like 22 episodes, or 22 minutes long. So it's a lot. The ensigns have what they call buffer time. So, you know, when they have a task to complete, they're not logging in the exact hours that it takes to complete something. So if something takes me 2 hours, I'll give myself 3 or 4 hours on the log. So that gives me quote unquote buffer time, right? To just chill, have a margarita. And then Freeman finds out and she's like obsessed with trying to make the ship look good because apparently the Cerritos doesn't have a good reputation.
Well, yeah, and there was another captain that she's obviously trying to impress the other captains and impress admirals and stuff. And there was another captain that she was hoping to impress, and then, you know, her ship was, you know, not
the rule that she puts in place. It's so exaggerated. Because if you were truly a leader, you would understand, like, you need to have some flexibility with the crew you're working with. Yeah. So she was just like, she made a 180 turn and she was like, "No, fuck this. I'm going to time everything that everyone does. You have to get done in 30 minutes, 10 minutes. There's a timer for everything you do," because she just had this obsession.
Yeah, and it was weird that, like, they started getting time allotted for tasks that was a lot lower than the amount of time it actually took. So everything started getting done half-assed, which, you know, seems like a terrible idea. And it was.
And then something else I liked in this episode was there was a lot of sexual tension between Mariner and Commander Ransom when they're on that island. They got caught by those people.
Yeah.
I forgot.
The crystal people.
The crystal people. They were caught by the crystal people, them and their away team. And then the leader of the crystal people was like, if you want to be free, you have to
trial by combat.
You have to engage in our trial by combat, and you have to fight this guy named Vindor. Vindor is this very the mountain-esque guy. He's super tall, super big, and, you know, bulky. Mm-hmm. Is bulky the right word?
Sure.
Ripped. He's very ripped.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's very that just saying trial by combat triggers Game of Thrones for me. So I like that aspect. And then the sexual tension between Mariner and Ransom, like they're in the dungeon and she's like showing off her like
scars.
And then when Ransom decides to, he takes the opportunity away from her to be part of the trial by combat, and then he rips off his shirt, and like she's totally like into it, and she's like, oh, why am I so into this? Yeah. That was hilarious. And then of course at the very very end of the episode where Freeman's like, oh, we're going to have this thing called the Boimler effect, and basically it's the opposite of the rule that she put in place.
Yeah, it essentially allows...
take as much time as you need to do the thing that you need to do.
Yep.
And then Boimler's like, oh no, that's not...
That's not me.
I
don't want that to be associated with me. Can we take my name off of it? And, you know, it's already on a plaque. And then cut to the far, far future. And they're like... And that's why, and that is our summary of the Boimler effect from the laziest Starfleet officer ever.
Bradley? Not Bradley. Bradward Boimler.
And then we move on. Now we'll move on to the most important person to ever serve in Star Trek, Chief O'Brien.
Oh, man. That was
Chief
good.
Miles O'Brien. But yeah.
That was so good. And then Miles's statue. Hologram statue shows up.
Yeah,
and he's just cracking. I'm just cracking.
He's in front of his transporter console.
Oh man! Hey, you can't get anywhere without O'Brien. He's doing his transporter magic. He made his space station move.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh huh.
Not in Next Generation, but still, he did it.
Yep.
I didn't even realize that Miles O'Brien wasn't in season 7 of The Next Generation.
Well, because he was just an ancillary character. Like, he showed up 2-3 episodes every season.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I didn't realize he wasn't in season 7 at all because he had gone to Deep Space Nine.
I mean, I felt the same way about Guinan, right? Like, I didn't notice she was gone until, like, you get through season 7. You're like, I haven't seen her since that...
that one episode.
That season 5, season 6, like, cliffhanger ending.
But anyways, that was a good episode 3. Episode 5, I also enjoyed. It was called Cupid's Errant Arrow. This is the one where Boimler has a girlfriend named Barb, but Barb's from another starship. And Mariner's like, what the fuck? You have a girlfriend? Like, this isn't just some holodeck program.
Yeah, and then she's like, wait, she's way too hot for you. Something's clearly wrong. You know, and you spend the whole episode trying to figure out what kind of alien she is. I liked the end where it turned out that it was Boimler that had the parasite that made his girlfriend...
become more attracted to him.
Yeah. I was like, ah, that does it. That makes sense.
It's funny because she knows she's right, and she's very determined to find the reason And just when she thinks, okay, so you're just this normal person who happens to like Boimler. But it turns out she's been right this whole time.
Yeah, it's like, no,
no. Oh, it was really good because, like, you know she's doing it because she does care about Boimler, but she's mostly doing it because she knows she's right.
Yeah, and you don't get the sense that, like, and I'm glad they didn't do this, and I hope they just continue to not do this. You don't get the sense that she's sexually attracted to Boimler or romantically
attracted to Boimler. No, if they get together, I'll be completely ruining the show.
Right?
Now, they're more like brother-sister.
I was like, you get the sense that, like...
They look out for each other.
Yeah, she's like, no, like... And, you know, they show us this flashback of her good friends from...
another ship.
Yeah, I think they were on Deep Space Nine or something. Yeah, and yeah, this turns out to be this horrible, like, human-eating shape-changer guy.
That was a freak accident.
Yeah.
That traumatized her.
Yeah. So she's always like, okay, if something seems too good to be true, it probably is. And there's no way Boimler can score a hottie like this. So.
So I want to take a short break because this has been bugging me and I don't know how to figure this out. So in Lower Decks and in The Next Generation, you never know somebody's age.
Okay.
So, Boimler, at some point earlier in the show, he's like, what back in the old days? You and I are the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Because yeah. Mariner's always referring to her past experiences, like she's older than him.
Mm-hmm.
But like, okay, we know for sure she's been on another ship. We know she's had more away team experiences because she's traveled more to other planets. Right. She's been exposed more to other species, but she's still an ensign, and he's like, we're the same age.
I think that they're roughly the same age. I think she might be 3 or 4 years older than him. And think about how much, like, if you get assigned to a ship that is similar to the Enterprise, think about how much experience you could get in alien civilizations and things.
Because they're in the 4 years. Ship.
Yeah. Like, imagine, like, especially we learn from her captain friend that that she was top of her class, right? Which mm-hmm. means she was probably assigned to a really good ship to start, right? So she probably does get a lot of good experience from a ship like, say, the Titan or something, because she knows Will Riker, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, spoiler alert, he's captain of the Titan. And so she could have been assigned to something like the Titan, and then, you know, through her own sort of cowboy diplomacy attitude, does something that gets her court-martialed and demoted, right? And then that her father decides, like, to put her on Captain Freeman's ship so that Captain Freeman can help protect her. But that means that, you know, Mariner has quite a bit, like, has years of really good experience that Boimler doesn't have. Because it sounds like Boimler is very fresh out of the academy, probably a year, maybe two.
So.
And this is his first posting.
I assumed the USS Cerritos was his first posting. And we know Mariner has been on a previous ship.
Right.
So in terms of age difference, they could be like 4 or 5 years apart, but still relatively close.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Cause they never reveal age on this show. And I don't recall learning about anybody's age on The Next Generation.
Data was 26. Well, he had 26 years of experience in Starfleet, and he joined Starfleet, like, right after being woken up. So, yeah, he was 26, 27.
Okay. Well, there's something. But he's also an artificial life form, so right. He'll never age.
Yeah.
He just puts gray hairs in for cosmetics. Data.
Which is, you know, part of why they couldn't keep the Next Generation going forever, because
everyone else was aging.
Well, Brent Spiner, the actor, can't continue to look like Data because his face ages.
Oh, I see. Well, wait, they put a lot of makeup on him already.
Not that much. I mean, enough to smooth out some wrinkles, but like when you've got a 70-year-old man, like there's not enough Vaseline in the world to smooth his face over.
Oh, man. Okay. So the last three episodes, 8, 9, and 10, are also my favorites.
Oh, they're all good. Yeah.
They're all good.
Yeah. I definitely like these last three for sure.
So, episode 8, Veritas.
Veritas.
I always mispronounce words, and it bugs me.
That's all right. I only know of that one because of some ridiculous conservative group also called the Veritas Project.
Okay.
That's the only reason I know.
So, I like this
How
one.
How to pronounce that one.
I like this one because the ensigns are put on trial. Some guy is asking them questions in the dark. There's this like this like light shining on them, and this guy's asking them questions, and they have to like call back to something. I forgot the details, but we get a bunch of random flashback scenes that are ridiculous, and eventually Q shows up. So John DeLancey reprises his role as Q, because you can't have Star Trek without Q.
Yeah, you can't.
And it's funny because Q shows up in this episode and he's in that garb that he's wearing in the pilot of The Next Generation. And I'm just like, ugh, I hated that. But I like his garb, but I hated that episode.
Yeah, but he also wore it in the last episode too.
Oh, he did.
Because he was like, the trial never ended, Picard. So Veritas was the goddess of truth for the Romans, just FYI.
Oh, that makes sense. Fun language fact. The word true in French is vrai, V-R-A-I.
Mm.
So on true-false tests, you write a V for true and an F for false.
Interesting.
Yeah, because in English, it's T for truth, true, and then F for false.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, students who, like, try to get away with writing both, you can't do that in French. It's a V, man.
Yeah, so in for pretty much all of my classes where it mattered, they were like, no, you write out the whole word. You write true or false. You don't write T or F. You write the whole word. There's no guessing here.
You had a better education than I did.
Interesting, because a lot of that happened at UTA. They're like, no, write the whole word. I'm not going to give you credit for writing a crossed T.
But yeah, Q reprises his role in this, and basically by the end of this episode, it turns out they were never really on trial. It just looked that way.
Yeah,
because like, this culture did things differently. It's like, we're here to celebrate. And your commanders, they were, what were they? It looked like they were suspended in air for bad reasons.
They were in the beam of celebration.
Oh, so weird.
Yeah, they're like, no, what do you, you threatened us with death by eel. What do you, how do you, how does this not seem like a trial? Yeah.
Episode 9 is called Crisis Point. This was such a delight.
This is so good because it was like, let's make fun of the J.J. Abrams movies. And like add all the crazy ass lens flares and oh man, it's just so good. I loved like when it first started up, Boimler's like, You programmed all of this in like 2 seconds? And like as he's getting hit by words from the credits because they're not just light, they're actually like physical names for some reason, and so they're like hitting them. It's good. Man, I loved it. This one was good.
Yeah. And the most important
No,
go ahead.
One of the other tropes that they did, and you haven't seen the movies, so you don't know, but they almost always destroy the ship in the movie. So the Enterprise has to be rebuilt, and that's why Captain Freeman was like, I want you to make it look like it did before. I don't like it when, you know, ship gets, you know, crashed and they rebuild it and gets all Sovereign class looking, because that's what happened to the Enterprise D. It crashes in one of the movies, and then they turn it into Enterprise E, which is this different looking Sovereign class ship.
So is Sovereign class above the Galaxy class?
It's a newer version, yeah.
Oh, okay. I learned something else about Star Trek today.
Yeah, that's a little tidbit. yeah, it's no longer the Galaxy class after, I want to say it was First Contact?
Wait. So you're saying they renamed Galaxy class to Sovereign class?
No, there's a new class of starship called the Sovereign class.
So they discontinue the Galaxy class.
Right.
Okay, so Sovereign's supposed to be better because it's got more advanced features.
It's newer.
Yeah. It's newer, okay. But Picard didn't like it.
I don't know. I don't know if he didn't like it. It looked way different because it was a movie. Mm-hmm. So the lighting in the rooms was all very different. I don't know that Picard didn't like it, but Freeman was saying that she didn't want her ship.
She didn't want that upgrade.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want it. I don't like it when ships come back looking all Sovereign class. because her ship, the Cerritos, is definitely newer than the Enterprise D. Because the Enterprise is 1701 and her ship is like 75,518 or something. So it's got 5 digits in its serial code instead of 4. So it's definitely newer, but it's also not a Galaxy-class ship. Like they said in the show, it's meant for, like, Second Contact. So they're just kind of going around, like, talking to people who have already been contacted and just checking up on them and stuff, I guess, helping smooth their transition into the Federation if they so choose. So it should look more like the Galaxy-class ships. Because it's not meant to be this super badass ship like the Titan.
And then the main thing from Crisis Point is that the secret is revealed at the end. And that leads us into the finale episode.
Yeah, so that's something that I wasn't really sure about for the whole time. I knew Boimler didn't know. I knew the Lower Decks didn't know.
But, like, all the other officers didn't know either.
Yeah, I did not know the senior officers did not know that Beckett and, Mariner and Freeman were related. I didn't know that. I didn't know they were keeping it secret. I thought it was strange that everyone was, just a little strange that everyone was treating it normally, but also not terribly strange because those sorts of biases are not supposed to exist in Starfleet. So it's like, well, yeah, she's the captain's daughter, but so what? She's an ensign. I'm a commander. I do what I want, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they all didn't know. So that was interesting.
So here's the other thing. I think this is a hiccup in the writing. Her last name is Mariner. So obviously Captain Freeman is using her maiden name. So that means her dad, the Admiral, is Admiral Mariner.
You would think that, right? I don't remember the first episode well enough to know that they have the same last name. And I thought about that in the first episode. I was like, I don't remember any of them having the same name. This is weird.
They don't say his... They don't say the Admiral's last name. It's not even in the IMDb credits. It just says Admiral.
Okay, so...
So I assumed, like, he's Admiral Mariner.
Yeah, but Mariner should be at least a common enough last name for humans that, like... That'd be like, hey, you're Ensign Jones and there's Admiral Jones. Are you guys related? Like, I mean, it's possible, but not... likely. Jones is way more common, right? But Mariner is not like so super uncommon that you would immediately go, hey, you guys related?
Mm. And then the finale, oh my god, so much went down in the finale. But let's talk about Rutherford, because I was sad.
About his implant?
Yeah, his implant gets taken out.
Yeah, and then he forgets. So actually, this is... I'm glad you brought this up, because this is a theme that has... The theme I'm about to talk about, it was the theme that kind of ran throughout the show. Everyone was on the Cerritos was almost always super helpful and understanding. Like, when Rutherford wanted to change jobs, mm-hmm. every time he was like, eh, I think I need to change jobs, his immediate boss was like, that's wonderful. Yeah, got to be true to yourself. Go on, you know, move on to this other job, whatever, right? Tendi... throughout the series has always just been super optimistic. Like in the episode where the ship was being taken over by the terraforming liquid, she is trying to get the guy that was faking ascension to like her because she hates it when people don't like her. And she's just constantly like super upbeat about everything. And so in this case, when she's like, oh, you don't remember me at all? That's great, because now we get to be, you know, get to, you know, become best friends all over again, right? And I'm not sure how much of that is, like, her personality, or how much of that is, like, a true personality, or how much of that is a coping mechanism where she's actually disappointed, but she's like, well, I can't change it, so fuck it, let's roll, right?
Maybe it's both. She's very peppy.
Yeah.
And that was obvious in the pilot.
I'm wondering if that's a fake peppiness, or it doesn't seem like it, because she seems, and that could be just the way the character is played, but the character seems to be like always peppy and always looking on the bright side of things. Even when things are just really, really weird, like her dog. Oh my God, her dog.
That is not a human dog that she created.
Well, dogs aren't human to begin with, but...
Well, that's not a human-esque dog that she created.
That's not a dog from Earth, that's for sure. Yeah. Wait, you knew you were a freak? Yeah, I just didn't want you to be worried.
I was freaked out when that dog turned into a spider, but still had its dog head.
I liked when it just suddenly turned into a metal cube and just started rolling down the hallway. I was like, yes, that is awesome.
But so since Rutherford lost his memories because his implant was taken away.
So do you think he'll go for a new implant, or?
I think for story purposes, they'll have him be without the implant in season 2.
The whole way? Interesting. Okay. I actually think they'll replace it.
Eh, maybe you're right. Maybe they'll replace it in the first episode of season 2.
Yeah, so they've got kind of two options, right? They can, or three, but so you can do what you said, have him not have it for the whole season, right? You could also have him not have it for a few episodes and then get it back after an episode where he anguishes over whether or not to get it again or whatever, because he's like, okay, well, I don't want to lose all my memories again if something like this happens, right? Or he just shows back up in season 2 with it on. Someone asks, didn't that get ripped out? And he's like, I don't know. And then they just like completely skip over what happened. Like, they ignore that they had it ripped out as a joke.
Well, this is a comedy, so that's totally plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lieutenant Shax was killed in this finale.
Yeah.
So that was sad.
You probably didn't. Did you recognize the parallels between this and the season ending of season 1 of The Next Generation?
I didn't watch. Did I watch that?
You didn't. I told you about it, but Lieutenant Tasha Yar, who was chief of security.
Yeah, yeah.
Dies at the end of season 1.
Uh-huh.
Lieutenant Shax, who's chief of security, dies at the end of season 1.
Okay, I get it.
And in this case, if they're trying, like, so the reason The Next Generation did it was they were trying to sort of drum up ratings, because they wanted, you know, something powerful to happen at the end of the season, so they, you know, permanently killed a character. I don't think it achieved that. I don't think they achieved that goal. Now, they did, you know, throughout the rest of the series kind of, you know, call back to it several times.
And they had Denise Crosby come back at least twice.
Yeah.
In later seasons.
So, you know, that worked out for them. I think that if that was the goal for Star Trek Lower Decks, I think it worked better because it wasn't just like, so in The Next Generation, it was just some malevolent, you know, patch of tar that kills her because it can or whatever. This, you know, was a sort of self-sacrifice to, you know, save a crew member and actually save the rest of the Cerritos. So, it meant a lot more. So I think if they were trying to, you know, be like, oh, wow, like people can die on this show,
they want to make an impact, and this did make an impact.
You know, and I ripped on the Orville for, you know, not picking Elaine, but I don't think that this show wanting to have a little bit of an emotional impact on you at the end of a season is necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think it's necessarily stepping outside of the lane of being a comedy. They they clearly want to be a comedy, but
you're going to have occasions where something serious does happen.
Right.
Because it's within the realm of possibility.
Right.
Someone could die in an explosion trying to save someone else.
Right. And it's still a comedy. And it's not unheard of to have people sort of come back. Like, so you could have another situation. You remember Thomas Riker?
Yeah.
So you could have a situation like that where you run back into Shax and it's like, oh, well, we got our Shax back. So, I mean, the other one's dead, but this one's like essentially the same guy. So, I mean, there's different ways. Like, if you wanted to reintroduce that character, there's lots of different ways to do it.
Or Shax could have an evil twin brother.
A la Lore. Yeah. There's that. So... yeah, there's definitely different things they could do there. I am excited for the end of the episode. One, because they played the best theme, the Next Generation theme, when the Titan comes in to save the day. And we get cameos from Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis. I recognized Marina's voice. I did not recognize Jonathan Frakes, and I've heard Jonathan Frakes on other shows like Gargoyles, where he voiced Xanatos, who was the main bad guy for the show. And I, you know, once I knew it was Jonathan Frakes, I was like, oh yeah. Also, Michael Dorn was on that show. And I think LeVar Burton. And definitely Marina Sirtis.
Gargoyles?
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I'll rewatch it just to hear their voices.
Marina Sirtis was definitely on there. I know Worf, or not Worf, Michael Dorn was in an episode for sure. I think LeVar Burton was. I'm not 100% sure that he was.
Wow. Okay.
But, so anyway, because of Jonathan Frakes showing up and Will Riker getting to be like a very fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants captain, like... supplying Mariner with all our contraband. I am really looking forward to season two because I think we're going to see a sort of split narrative for a little bit where there's episodes that follow the Titan and Boimler on the Titan and episodes that follow Mariner on Cerritos.
Yeah, you basically just said what I was going to say for theories for season two. I think there's going to be more interactions between multiple starships, the two you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there's going to be others. The Titan will interact with others. The Cerritos will interact with others. At some points, they're going to merge. At some points, they might not merge, but you'll see Boimler and Mariner still, like, talk to each other.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah. And then I was going to say, I hope... it looks like with the direction they're going with, Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis could be regulars.
Yeah, I think you're right. At least Jonathan Frakes. Because I didn't recognize Jonathan Frakes' voice, but I did recognize Marina Sirtis, I Googled, like, why wasn't Jonathan Frakes in Star Trek Lower Decks, and the results were like Jonathan Frakes reprises Riker role in Star Trek Lower Decks. I'm like, bullshit, that didn't sound like him, and obviously it was. But I read an interview where Jonathan Frakes was saying the showrunner approached him, was like, would you like to be a part of the show? And he's like, yes, of course. So yeah, I think at least Jonathan Frakes will want to be a regular part of season two, if possible.
In that cameo in the finale, I did not recognize his voice either. I didn't recognize Marina's voice either. Like, they were just off a little bit. Frakes, for sure, because it wasn't, his voice wasn't as deep.
Yeah, right.
As Riker normally is.
And Marina's was a little deeper, just because she's older, and so I expected that. Like, it still sounded like her to me, but yeah, Will Riker did not sound like Will Riker. He sounded like some other guy impersonating Will Riker, but with a higher pitched voice. It was weird.
Impersonating Will Riker.
I mean, obviously it wasn't, right? It was actually Jonathan Frakes, but...
Maybe it was because of age. So because Marina's voice got a little deeper with age, maybe Jonathan Frakes' voice changed?
No, I think he was playing the character different. So he said one of the things that he really liked was that the showrunner allowed him to do the thing that he wanted to do with Will Riker for years, and that was play him as a wild and crazy man.
Wild and crazy man.
Yeah, or something to that effect, right? He wants Will Riker to be kind of a kook, I guess. So for that, he may have adopted a higher pitched voice when he voiced the character.
Mm.
So that may have been a choice by Jonathan Frakes, but it just didn't sound like Will Riker. I like the idea of Will Riker being a kook, and
it fits in with the DNA of the show.
Right. Yeah. I would still prefer him to have the deeper Will Riker voice, though.
Yeah. No. Same. Yeah. It's very disconcerting.
I was like, you can definitely be a happier, like go luckier Will Riker, but use the deeper voice because you sound not like Will Riker, and it's saddening because I was like, why didn't he show up? I'm sure he likes Star Trek. He showed up in Picard. Oh, spoiler, he shows up in Picard.
you can't have a captain without his number one.
He doesn't show up like that. You're gonna be disappointed.
Okay. But yeah, I'm very excited for season two. Since the crew already figured out how to work during COVID, because they had to work on half the season during COVID, the pandemic, I would not be surprised if we got season two a little earlier next year. So season one came out August of 2020. I would not be surprised if season two came out, say, May or June of 2021.
Yeah, so that's the weird thing about TV shows now, right? So before, there was clear seasons, right? A whole season ran from September to May. And the whole reason...
No, that's for broadcast shows.
Right. This is where I'm going.
Okay.
And the reason that it started in September was that was when new car models came out, right? And so the car companies would want to advertise their new cars when the new TV shows were airing.
Wait, that's the reason?
Yeah, that's why we have September.
I thought the reason shows started in September was because of school.
I mean, so that's the other thing is that because of school, people are taking fewer vacations at that point, and so people are more likely to be home and be around to watch television, right?
Yeah.
And so you sort of have a season that runs the school year for that reason. But the car model thing is also true. And, you know, for broadcast television, that's still kind of true. But it used to be like for 26 weeks, you would have like 13 episodes and then maybe a mid-season cliffhanger and then another 13 episodes that has maybe a season finale cliffhanger. But now... shows are doing 10 episodes, 8 episodes. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get lucky and one's doing 16 or 17 for this whole time period. But now a lot of shows aren't even going for the September to May season. They're just like, eh, we'll release when we release. And I think animated shows are probably the most guilty of this.
Releasing in whatever dates that work for them is more flexible for sure, because you're not competing with other animated shows for a September release.
So yeah, that's the thing. I wonder what the calculus is for when you release a show now. Like, you can obviously just be like, well, it's done when it's done, we'll release when we release. But there has to also be some other calculus, like, especially if you're an online only show, right? If you're a streaming only show, you have to be worried about, like, what the other releases from the other platforms that you're not on are, right? You don't want to accidentally go up against something like Tiger King when Tiger King's really popular, right? Which it's not popular anymore, but, you know, for the 3 weeks that it was popular, like, you wouldn't have wanted to release your good show while that was stealing the limelight, right?
So there's some marketing aspects to the decision, yeah.
Right, but you have to know what the other studios are doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I assume there's a lot of crosstalk between, or corporate espionage to figure out when people are releasing certain things. But it's going to be, I think it's going to be weird now. You can't necessarily expect something even to be on an annual schedule, right? Like, there's no reason that, if I release a season in August of 2020, that I can't just release another quote unquote season in February of 2021, right? If I have it done, right? There's no reason to wait. In fact, there's a little more of a pressure to release something sooner while people are still interested in it. Which is, I think, part of what the downfall of the Venture Brothers was. Sorry, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but I think they've been on the air for something ridiculous like 13 years.
And then they recently just got canceled.
Yeah, but 13 years and 7 seasons.
Yeah, yeah, you told me this story.
it's crazy.
Yeah, so it was like a season every 2 years?
Well, every year and a half-ish.
Ish, okay.
Yeah, so that was the other thing. Like, it sort of came on a schedule, but because there are so few episodes, right? Like, if you're just trying to fit it in somewhere between the months of September and May, and you've only got, say, 8 to 12 episodes, there's tons of 8 to 12 week windows to fit in that whole, you know, 26 week period. So you could certainly, like, just go, oh, well, here we're gonna do one here in fall, and the next one's gonna be the next spring, like the spring a year and a half later. So it was a weird release schedule, and I really love the show, and I hope somebody picks it up. But that has nothing to do with this show. I like Star Trek Lower Decks. Obviously, it's getting a second season, so I don't have to worry about it.
I want to end on this. If Jonathan Frakes is a regular and maybe Marina Sirtis is a regular, I hope they have maybe at least one episode where they just bring back all of the original cast for, like, something special. So Picard shows up, Geordi, LeVar Burton shows up, Michael Dorn. Maybe Beverly, but her character is a medical officer, so I'm not sure in what situation she would show up.
See, I'm not sure Gates McFadden will show up. And the only reason I say that is there was a cameo episode of all of them on Family Guy, and I think she was the only one that was not there.
So maybe she's not doing voice acting.
And maybe she's done with Star Trek. She's like, I do not want any piece of this. Whereas the rest of them are like, look, it pays money, and the fans aren't always terrible. So,
well, okay, so this is outside Star Trek Lower Decks. It's just discussion now. But Gates McFadden, she didn't do a lot of conventions in recent years, and I recognized her face in her photo, obviously, whenever a convention would announce their guests, right? I always saw Michael Dorn listed as a guest, and I always saw Brent Spiner as a guest. Gates McFadden, I think she occasionally did conventions for Star Trek, and she... I know there was one recently where she was listed. I can't remember the convention, but it just sounds like she's done with Star Trek, or maybe she's got personal things going on in her life and she doesn't really need the money from conventions. I don't know. Like, some actors need the money. Some actors really genuinely enjoy their work and want to interact with fans.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I would love to speculate, but I have no idea.
But I'm just bringing it up because my hope, I don't know if it's going to happen for, you know, budget reasons or whatever, but my hope is that they all return for one episode.
They all come back. And it's not impossible. Well, I don't want to spoil it. There's one character that...
Don't say anything.
Okay. All right. Anyway, it would be nice to have all of them back.
And that wraps up our discussion on season one of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Make it so, number one.
Aye, Captain.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at bingeablespod, or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time.
The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G.
And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin.